Hello and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and not want to be a half-blood. I am one of your hosts, Kata MacArthur, and whom am I joined by?
Of course, you are joined by, I would say, your favorite demigod, Cole Browning.
Hi, Cole. Which one of your parents is your godly parent, and which one adopted you? Because I've met both your parents many times.
Ooh, that's a great question. I think I'm going to say that my mother is secretly Hestia, goddess of the hearth.
Just want to stay home all day?
No, it's kind of the sense of I feel like we'd all be dead without my mother.
Yeah, fair.
I would say if you've ever seen the movie Mars Needs Moms.
I haven't and no one else has either.
Other people have. It is possible. No. But yeah, Supermom. She's close enough to Hestia.
Fair enough. If anybody couldn't tell, hi, audience. We're talking about Percy Jackson today. Cole, did you ever do that? Did you ever have, like, the... We're just going to jump straight into it. Cole, did you ever have the not the demigod files, but when reading, when you, like, were first reading through the books as a kid, did you have, like, the Percy Jackson guidebook that had, like, all the quizzes and stuff and, like, take this BuzzFeed quiz type shit to see what your godly parent is?
I actually did not.
No?
I rented them from the library originally, and then I ended up buying the set after I had gone through the first series. Mm-hmm. However, I do think I took a BuzzFeed test on this, and I want to say I was a cross between Apollo and Athena. Mm-hmm. Depending on my mood in the day, whether I was feeling more drummer or more mathematician.
Yes, yes, of course. Yeah, I bought everything Percy Jackson. I guess we should talk about why we're talking about Percy Jackson. Audience, Cole, we all know that we all know and love Percy Jackson and Rick Riordan overall, and we all know that the Disney Plus show with Walker Scobell as Percy is in. It's coming out with a third season, I think, at the end of this year. So this is our means of preparing with the end of the summer. Very. In tune with Percy Jackson. With the end of the summer approaching, we wanted to squeeze in a little bit more summer flair by talking about Percy Jackson and also prepare to talk about the second season and second book later on when the third season comes out. But today, Cole, we're going to be talking about specifically Lightning Thief, that being the first book, of course, by Rick Riordan and the first season of the show. And I guess we'll mention the Logan Lerman movie. I say I guess. I have a deep love for it as a child. But we're going to be talking about Lightning Thief.
Hell yeah.
But yeah.
I love the movie. I think I saw the movie before I read the book.
Same.
And then loved the book. And then watched the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
Not when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I waited for every episode to come out, and I think I watched it in like a 6-hour span.
Same. I remember when the show was first coming out, I was rereading Lightning Thief to get ready for it. And I remember I matched with a girl on Hinge where she was like, her prompt was, tell me about what book you're reading. And I told her Percy Jackson, and she was like, oh, sounds like we gotta watch the show together. And then we went on a date, but we never watched the show. We ended up watching The Green Knight and with Dev Patel and Samurai Jack and Adventure Time. It was an interesting date. Didn't involve Percy Jackson, though.
So only one out of those things actually sounded fun, and that would be Samurai Jack. I won't go into it now, but if you haven't seen our Cartoon Network episode, you'll get to listen to me kind of rag on Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm. Wrong.
Damn, you really just didn't take advantage of the opportunity, man.
Well,
second date could have been Percy Jackson.
Well, she ghosted me afterwards, so that didn't happen anyway. But...
It might have been because you were reading Percy Jackson.
I wasn't reading Percy Jackson during the date, and she was also cool with the fact... We don't have to get into the date that did not work out, but that's all.
I think that is actually very important for
I disagree.
Today's episode.
I think we should move on immediately, and instead of talking about starting off with our modern-day perception of Percy Jackson, Cole, why don't we open up this conversation with the first book, that sort of early adventure into the world of the Lightning Thief and Rick Riordan's modern mythology franchise, I guess, by talking about our history with Percy Jackson, the series, the franchise, as kids. Like we said, we both read the books as kids. I also
just as kids?
Not just as kids. There has definitely been several rereads.
I would say I'll make mine really quick. I started reading it at 11. Mm-hmm. I think I finished it by the time I was 13. Mm-hmm. Waited 2 years for the new series that came out. Reread the books.
Yep.
New series. COVID hit. Finished the Apollo trials.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm reading Court of the Dead, which is the newest Nico and Will.
Yes.
Book. I've gotten every single book for Christmas.
Mm.
Every single year, Rick Riordan actually releases a book.
Ah, good old Uncle Rick.
So yeah, I was going to say kid history. This is just current mythology.
Right. Started as a kid, but has yet to see an end of it. And hopefully it never will see an end because, yeah, these books are a big part of my childhood, to be sure. My first exposure to Percy Jackson was also the Logan Lerman movie. I didn't immediately fall in love with it at that point because when I was a kid, little child Cadden was scared of everything, including the Medusa scene in the movie. I don't know what about it. It just scared me.
So Medusa was scary, and of course you shouldn't look at Medusa.
Right.
But child Cole also would have said, don't worry, I hate snakes,
mm-hmm.
but I can look at Alexandra Daddario instead.
Also true. Also true.
I was going to say, this movie was also my first anything where I'd ever seen Alexandra Daddario, and I'm like, damn, Annabeth really is just like out of Percy's league.
I think that's always slightly the point in the books.
Oh yeah, it gets a lot more clear in the later series.
But hey, Logan Lerman's a good-looking guy too. Let's not dunk on Logan. Everybody's favorite white boy.
No, we're not dunking on him. But literally, the past few books have just been, guys, you don't realize how like fortunate it is that I have Annabeth,
because
I'd be dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, without a doubt. But I was initially scared of the movie, refused to watch it when my brother first like rented it at Blockbuster or whatever. I then, oh God, rest in peace to Blockbuster.
I know, I was just going to say, doing like $5 for the weekend to rent this movie. Ugh, you could watch it like half a dozen times.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I probably ate a mess ton of those Haribo Coca-Cola gummies that were like almost exclusive to a Blockbuster at the time.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure those were my movie snack for this Percy Jackson movie. Because I didn't go see it in theaters. Mm-hmm. I know that.
Same. I saw Sea of Monsters in theaters, but we'll get to that later in a future episode.
I forgot that movie even had a theatrical release.
It sure did. But I initially saw the movie, was scared of the movie, eventually developed the bravery to return to the movie, loved the movie as a kid, which of course then led me into loving the books as a kid, getting started on the books, and sort of this is definitely what kicked off young Cadden being an avid reader, which I really should return to.
Do you remember how many AR points The Lightning Thief was worth?
I don't recall. I got all of my AR points and got on AR Honor Roll as a kid solely through Geronimo Stilton books.
That is absolutely amazing that there were that many.
Yep.
To get you those points.
All the Geronimo Stiltons were worth 1 point each, and I read two a day.
Holy shit.
Yep.
I want to say this first Percy Jackson book was worth like 12 or 14 points, so it was like a pretty serious read.
I think they only went up to 4. I don't know what books you were reading. I don't know how they did AR at your school.
Dude, I read some that were like 40 to 60 because I took an AR test on Jurassic Park.
Okay.
All I know is I would describe picture books, Percy Jackson, Jurassic Park as my reading steps. Those are the three scales of reading.
Yeah.
If you clearly can read a Percy Jackson book without any problems, it's time for you to start learning about chaos theory, baby.
Fair. That does fall in line. But I do remember The Lightning Thief was one summer one of the books on the summer reading list, so that was a very easy summer for me. But yeah, reading Lightning Thief and the rest of the main series of five Percy Jackson books was a cornerstone of my childhood. It was like the recess games that me and my friends would play, that like, we're all demigods at Camp Half-Blood during recess. And going on from there, I talked about this a little bit in the solo episode I did on the mythology stuff a couple episodes ago, but just to say it again, I so handedly give so much credit to Rick Riordan and his writing as in terms of who I am as a person. I mean that wholeheartedly, because these books, the movie, then the books, started off my interest in mythology. My interest in mythology eventually got me into my interest in history, and those interests in combination eventually went on to like developing my interest in other cultures and other practices and other histories, other people's perspectives, and I feel like hopefully possibly that developed my sense of empathy as a person and seeing things from other people's perspective as a person. So
you're going way too deep in this.
I was gonna say, love these books.
Just plug the book.
Read Lightning Thief if you haven't already.
No, not plug this book. This book has been plugged for a good 15 years. Everybody, if you don't know, this is your fun Kaden fact of the day.
Oh.
Kaden actually wrote a Greek mythology book when we were in junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
It was never released. He still has it deep in the recesses of somewhere. I think I still have it.
You know where it might be.
He did actually get our English teacher to proofread it.
Yeah.
So it did at least go through one proof.
It did. Miss McCarthy was very nice about it.
Last I remember, it was different enough from Rick Riordan's series that it could like stand alone. And all I gotta say now, the Rick Riordan Presents kind of imprint, you got it. You already have it in.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you think it was original enough, because like looking back at those original drafts of that book, I can definitely think back and remember like so many like bits and pieces that were only in there because I loved Percy Jackson. But yeah, that was another expression of my love for mythology that these books gave me.
That's true. If I remember, I don't think anyone in your books had as much ADHD as there is.
No.
In this series. Because I gotta say, I think that's my first opening thing to reading, you know, the first few pages of Percy Jackson, kind of getting into the book now.
Yeah.
This man's attention span is like a squirrel.
Right. I mean, that was part of the inspiration in Uncle Rick writing these books, is that he was prior an author for like crime novels, and he wrote Percy as a character, this hero, this young preteen hero, as a person with ADHD and dyslexia, because Riordan's son also had ADHD and dyslexia, and he wanted to give his son like basically a hero to look up to see, you know, that's, he's just like me kind of thing.
I had never knew that.
That's a thing.
Such a sweet like thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. They should give Rick Riordan some sort of like Father's Day prize.
They should. Every day. Uncle's Day prize. Uncle Rick.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I did notice you called him Uncle Rick. What's with that?
That's what you don't know? That's what the PJO Heroes of Olympus fandom calls Rick Riordan. He's Uncle Rick on Twitter. Well, it's not like that's not a Twitter handle, but the fandom calls him Uncle Rick.
I'm sorry, I didn't know this. I'm not in the Twitter, no.
No. My favorite thing about Percy Jackson in the modern day is not just the books, but like how all of the memes that the fandom creates feels like 2014 Tumblr.
As it should.
As it should.
I was going to say, everything coming out of Percy Jackson, even though the full series goes through like 7-8 years, everything pertaining to the books, even as time progresses, should just be 2014 Tumblr.
Yes.
We should never leave 2014 Tumblr.
Right. But yeah, the Percy was written as sort of an analog in some ways to Riordan's son with the ADHD and dyslexia. You know, we get the reasoning behind it as, you know, it's his, you know, demigod brains are wired differently. And so you're tuned for battle and, you know, to read ancient Greek or whatever. But Percy is such a great part of the reason Percy is such a great character in the books is that he is such a like a champion of the downtrodden. He is this kid that is constantly bullied for being the new kid all the time, something that lots of kids can relate to. He's bullied for his ADHD and dyslexia, and that sets up a strong foundation, especially in this book. In this first book, in Lightning Thief, it sets up such a strong foundation for Percy as this hero of the downtrodden because he wants to do good because he knows what it's like to be treated poorly and abandoned. And the ways that he has been treated poorly and abandoned comes out in so many ways, like his, you know, defense mechanisms of humor and sarcasm and stuff.
But yeah, I guess in terms of the way he's been treated poorly and abandoned, I never really, like, got that. I mean, I guess treated poorly, yes. Absent parents, all of them have absent parents.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, especially in, like, this first book, this man, like, has a caring mother.
Oh, yeah.
They go on vacations.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure compared to a lot of the kids that were already in camp, him being a child of one of the big three, he somehow made it a lot longer than, like, the kids of the minor gods had before being attacked.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure there was almost kind of a sense of extreme jealousy, not of, like, his power and, like, his dad being, like, a major god, but more of just the sense of, how the fuck did you get, like, an extra 3 years of your childhood?
I mean, it is entirely Sally Jackson, the greatest person on earth. Throughout the book series, she is like the light of Percy's life. She is his whole motivation in going on the quest in the first book. And like, she puts herself at risk.
Look, I would be okay if Sally Jackson gave me cancer.
Oh.
Because I got to point out her risk, but then also the color blue and all of the fucking blue food dye.
I see.
I was going to say yes. I forgot. Sally Jackson, championship protector. Also, world-class chef of anything blue.
Worked in a candy store.
Every single time I read the Percy Jackson book, I honestly just want some of these like blue cookies. And I imagine that these cookies are like blue-dyed salted caramel. I'm not sure if it ever tells us like what the blue cookies are, but I want to imagine that they're salted caramel cookies where like the actual dough is blue. But yeah, sorry to interrupt. Sally Jackson, though, OG.
Wasn't it tasted? Oh, I think it was chocolate chip cookies that the cookies were. But yes, Sally Jackson, amazing, amazing mother. She could have been like such a simple kind of one note character, but she's really not because of like how much she's not just this bright, always sunshiny, happy as can be kind of character because of like how much she goes through for Percy in particular and how much she puts herself through in terms of, you know, finding new schools and, you know, losing jobs for Percy and having to deal with Gabe.
Fuck Gabe.
Fuck this Gabe.
This abusive little prick.
I know.
For some reason, who played him in the movie?
Oh, God.
I want to say it was movie. Gabe. Some Italian man. It had to be an Italian man.
In the 2010 movie, it was Joe Pantoliano. Pantoliano.
That's why. Greatest casting for a sack of shit. I would say Joe Pantoliano. Great actor. He was Ben Ulrich in Daredevil, if you guys don't know. The reason that I would call him a sack of shit is because he was, spoilers for a movie 25 years ago, he was the traitor in the first Matrix movie.
Okay.
But yeah, either way, greatest casting for this little prick.
Oh my God, that is the same actor.
Did you not realize it was the same guy?
Oh my God, what's his fucking name? Cyrus or whatever? No.
Cypher.
Yeah. Oh my God, that is Gabe. Holy shit.
Dude, the casting for the movie was fucking on point.
Well, looking at that, in terms of adaptation, do you have any sense of like how the characters of Percy and Sally and Annabeth and Grover, etc., compare between the books and the movie and the show, first season of the show?
I feel like Percy's pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I liked Grover being as close to age in Percy. The way I always saw it, without kind of going back into the details of reading, but the picture in my head was always that, like, Grover was like a high schooler and that he basically kind of looked like an older brother more to Percy, and that he just ended up aging slower. And he just kind of, you know, satyrs look young for longer amounts of time.
Mm.
But I that kind of felt weird to me, of Grover basically just being a kid that was Percy's age.
I mean, it had to be believable that they were in the same grade.
Yeah, you got a good point.
Like in the book, it's described as he looks as to be of a similar age to Percy, but he's got like the goatee, and that makes Percy believe has been held back once or twice. But yeah, I agree with the opinion on Percy's casting. I think Walker Scobell is a really good Percy. My thing with Walker Scobell as Percy Jackson,
I think he's a great Percy.
I think he's a really good Percy. I think he could be great because I've seen the Adam Project, and Walker Scobell in the Adam Project,
he's just Ryan Reynolds.
But it's like so Percy, how little of a shit he gives, and how bubbly and energetic, or I guess not like energetic, but like how quick-witted he is in the Adam Project. Walker Scobell, if he just did more Adam Project, I think he's great in the show. But like that, when I saw the Adam Project, it was like after I had heard that the Disney Plus show was coming out, and I had heard that this kid from the Adam Project was being cast as Percy Jackson, and then I watched the Adam Project, and I was like, yep, I'm sold.
I mean, yeah, I would say he really, if the Adam Project was the audition, he sold it. Mm. It was amazing.
Yes, for sure.
I guess the one thing that could make Percy slightly better, and this may be a hot take,
mm-hmm.
I feel like the way that they portrayed Percy in both the adaptations of the movie and the TV show is a bit more heroic than the Percy in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the Percy in the books is just kind of fumbling his way, and then he just kind of says, oh no, they're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
This will probably get me killed, but I'm going to do it anyways.
I can agree with that. Like, he steps up a lot more
like
in the show.
Both of the adaptations make him think, it makes him look like he has a bit more of a plan.
He's a bit cooler in both. Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
I feel like he was just kind of the, oops, I'm going to fall on the puddle, but then that puddle is accidentally going to blind the villain,
mm-hmm.
and go through like this Rube Goldberg machine of somehow succeeding in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like that's book Percy.
Yeah, and we get the benefit in the book of obviously having Percy's inner monologue, but I feel like the biggest thing in a similar vein, the biggest difference between book Percy and show Percy is I feel like overall the writing for and the performance for Percy in the show is much more serious, like less jokey.
I see what you're saying. More, yeah. Adam Project. He really needs to channel his inner Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I'd say
this
so.
This man needs to call up Ryan before every episode he films and be like, all right, what would Deadpool say?
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes Ryan Reynolds normally is basically 75% Deadpool.
Right.
So he just slightly tones down Deadpool, and that's Percy Jackson.
I think there is a middle ground that if they take the Percy in the show as they have him and Walker Scobell in the Adam Project, if they just like found that middle ground, I think it would be perfect, because Percy's jokes aren't just like an entertaining part of his character. It's an important part of his character. Humor is his defense mechanism.
Yeah. Percy needs the humor.
Yes.
I would say that is what keeps him sane.
Yeah.
But let's see what else about the show. mm-hmm. in the book. Megan Mullally as Mrs. Dodd.
Yeah.
The scariest version I could ever think of as a harpy.
As a fury.
Oh, that's right. She was one of the Furies. Mm-hmm. I get the Furies and the Harpies mixed up all the time. But yeah, scary Fury. Pierce Brosnan's still the best Chiron. I don't think that you can ever beat that.
Mm.
It's so hard for Jason Mantzoukas to be Mr. D.
Okay. Yes.
Because he's great, but also this is a Disney Plus children's show.
Yeah.
And I feel like the one thing that needs to be unhinged about this show mm-hmm. is Mr. D.
So you want Jason Mantzoukas to go even more Mantzoukas?
Yes, I want him to be even more unhinged.
Okay. I in principle I don't mind that casting because I love Jason Mantzoukas. But like in the show, I feel like he's just pure Mantzoukas, but just a little bit meaner. In the way I picture Dionysus, and I guess this is a subjective interpretation, the way I picture Dionysus in the books is that he is just like, he's not loud and zany like Mantzoukas. He's a curmudgeonly old drunk. He literally could not give a shit about anyone in the camp, Percy included, Perry Johnson included.
I think that he very much cares about no one.
Yes. Except his kids.
Maybe a little bit about Perry Johnson.
I don't think he gives a shit about Perry.
I think he gives a shit about Perry Johnson only because he knows someone named Perry.
Maybe.
And that's probably something pretty special. That's why he remembers the name Perry Johnson.
I can see that.
But I think, so I never really saw him as a curmudgeonly mm-hmm. old man kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I always just kind of saw him as, what I imagined him is basically the angry Jimmy Buffett.
Okay.
Because he can't be in Margaritaville. And I feel like that's exactly what Jason Mantzoukas is, I want to be in Margaritaville, but I can never touch it.
You know what? That's based. I think it's a fair interpretation.
So I think I like him being younger because I feel like it's still the zany energy. It's literally, I just want to have alcohol in my hand and I can't.
Mm-hmm.
This man actively hates being sober.
Well, yeah. God of wine and all that. But yeah, Dionysus.
And madness, remember.
And madness. Dionysus is a subjective interpretation. I like Mantzoukas. Not how I imagined him, but that is subjective. You mentioned like Pierce Brosnan as Chiron. And we have in the show, we have Glenn Turman as Chiron, who I also think is good. I think Brosnan's...
He is really good.
Yes. I think both interpretations are good because, you know, Chiron is this advisor to Percy throughout the whole first book, and then, like, it's taken away in the second book, but he is this point of stability and trust for Percy until he, like, leaves for his quest. And I think, like, both Glenn Turman and Pierce Brosnan both capture that. I do think Pierce Brosnan has a bit more of that, like, you know, vitality that we kind of see in Chiron in the books, and Glenn Turman might have more of that, like, stern mentor kind of role, kind of personality. So maybe, again, there is some middle ground between the two of them, but I think both are good adaptations to show that, you know, fierce protective nature, but also, like, the kind teacher nature.
I wish that Pierce Brosnan was the one in the TV show with Jason Mantzoukas as Mr. D.
That'd be interesting.
Because I feel like Brosnan's Chiron would be so cool
mm-hmm.
only because he's Bond. He has that martini shaken, not stirred, just hidden in his wheelchair at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And just like every single time Mr. D tries to steal it, it just turns back into like tonic water or something.
Yeah.
This is going in my fan fiction, by the way.
Okay.
But yeah, I just feel like basically having Bond being the wise alcoholic
mm-hmm.
and the singular alcoholic who is literally the god of it, not being able to touch shit around Bond is the greatest like side story.
I like that fan fiction. But I think one other character we have to... There are more, like, characters that we could bring up. Touching on Annabeth, of course, she's this, you know, strong, intelligent, calculated, but underneath caring and friendly face, eventually more than friendly face, to Percy.
Okay. So here's the thing about Annabeth, yes. though. I was going to say calculating and caring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the one in the series was cold enough.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Like, I feel like the one in the movie kind of hit being cold enough, but only because I don't feel like they traumatized Annabeth in the TV series enough. Like, I feel like that was kind of an important part of the first five books as a whole, is kind of getting Annabeth to open up about her trauma bonding with Thalia and Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think they're going to get the runway to pay that off with how they made her in the TV series. Like, I don't think she's traumatized enough.
Well, in the show, we get about as much backstory on Annabeth as we do in the first book, in the first season. Like, basically all we know is, like, she came to Camp Half-Blood as a young girl who, you know, after running away from home with her dad, who she saw as, like, a very negligent, blah, blah. And that led her to finding Luke and Thalia down the road. And then we get more of that information. We get more of that backstory, obviously, in the second book and second season.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to get more. Again, I haven't seen the second season, so I can't really say much about how this continues. But I feel like we definitely got that she was very street smart, very wise in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish there was a bit more cold and calculating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lea Salva-Jeffries plays her in, like, a very, like, trying to be mature way, which I think fits with Annabeth, but I think she goes between that trying to be mature leader hero kind of role to that, like, having to break down and be emotional towards Percy when he make that weird sacrifice on Hephaestus's throne in the love tube ride, whatever.
The love tube.
Yeah. But it's like, I still think she does a really good job.
She does do a really good job.
Especially, like, all the kid actors do really well in this show. I have zero overall complaints about any of their performances. It's just, like, it is a matter of interpretation and seeing, like, I would have imagined Annabeth in the books as to, like, having those moments of, like, breaking her maturity and, like, getting annoyed with Percy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think in the series, the kind of the maturity of, like, trying to be mature kind of crumbled in, like, moments of fear.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
When I feel like in the book, it would have been moments of anger instead.
Mm.
Like, I feel like the characterization in the book is, I wouldn't say that Annabeth is a born leader.
Really?
I would say she has the best qualities of a leader.
Okay.
Because, you know, Athena strategy. But, like, I would say she has a bit of a temper.
Yes.
I would say that I don't feel like came across as much, at least in the first season of the show.
Okay. Well, another character who is definitely strategizing throughout is, of course, Luke. In the book.
Fucking fantastic. Great in the book. Great in the series. Great in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They've never gone wrong with Luke. Love Luke. I do like that he got away.
Mm-hmm. He can fucking teleport because back by now in the show.
I kind of just fucking hated that he kind of just got yeeted from the Empire State Building, or what was it, like the beach or something in the movie.
It was like,
fuck how Luke went in the first movie.
In the movie, he wasn't the Empire State Building, but he, like, got tridented from the rooftop into Hudson Bay.
Yeah, that was some bullshit.
But yeah, Luke in the book Luke in the book is the first non-Grover friend that at camp that Percy feels he can trust, and that ingratiates both Percy and us as the audience to Luke, because he's this first character that Percy can relate to as the one who is able to share his grief about being abandoned. And like, we then eventually, when we get the reveal as to Luke being the bad guy, we understand, like, we go on to understand that Luke is what Percy could have become without good support like Sally.
Dude, it hurts so much in the TV series, and that made me so happy, because I feel like it's going to make book 5 pay off even more.
The reveal was sad to you in the show?
Yeah, like, I knew that, we all knew that he was the traitor, right, if you'd read the books. Right. But, like, the betrayal was so well done.
I do like Charlie Bushnell's performance in that last scene. You can tell, like, there's some tragedy behind it, especially when Annabeth is revealed and they those two lock eyes.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, that's one thing I got to give credit to, at least the emotion that Annabeth, because it was rare to show in the beginning, mm-hmm. The absolute devastation that the actress showed when it's like, it's Luke.
Yeah.
Absolute gut punch.
And I think it should be. Like, overall, Luke should be a tragic character.
He should be, but I think one of the things that I liked, at least about the Luke performance in the TV series,
mm-hmm.
is that he is a tragic character.
Yes.
Like, he's still very charismatic.
Right.
But you can kind of just look into the eyes and be like, there's something dark there. There's something messed up.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can't help but feel sorry, even though he's basically Golden Boy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was going to say, Luke is probably the most important character in the first 5 Percy Jackson books.
Mm-hmm. He's the, we see in the 5th book that he's the center of the prophecy.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, Percy Jackson, they're his books,
right,
but without Luke being as strong as a character as he is, mm-hmm. and having the right actor to play him, mm-hmm. everything would fall apart.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, Luke was probably the second most important casting to the series.
That's not a bad, that is not a bad interpretation. That is not a bad thought. But, of course,
let's see.
Of course, the reason Luke is so messed up are, of course, the gods. If we want to get into discussion on their portrayals in the bookend show.
Fuck the gods. They are mean.
That, hey, yes, that is what the show is definitely saying.
I would say Timothy O'Munson, fantastic. He's the only one that we shouldn't hate. Hephaestus is just a good old boy.
Oh, yeah.
He's just sad sometimes because he had his heart broken.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be mad at Hephaestus. Hephaestus is just a bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The show definitely does more of that, like, really needing to push that this is going to be a series right off the bat. Like, we get a lot more, we get a lot more early interactions with the gods in the show compared to what we do in the books. Like, we do see Hephaestus early on when originally he didn't show up till book 4, Battle of the Labyrinth. And then we also see Hermes show up to, like, you know, work in that, the tragedy behind Luke's backstory early on, played by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I think is fun.
Terrible casting.
Terrible casting?
Yes.
Why?
This is going to be my correct take. Lin-Manuel Miranda is not Hermes.
Did you want him to rap?
He's objectively Apollo. I don't know why they cast him as Hermes.
You know what? Not unfair.
Yeah, I think there could have been a better Hermes. However, if you had made that man the sun god, I'm here for it. I don't think anybody could have disputed that. That was literally the only god that they should have given the role to without any auditions. It's just been like, here you go. Rap your ass off.
I do like him. I do like Lin as Hermes, though I will not disagree with that fan casting.
I mean, he definitely, a plus is that that man is in the series.
Yes,
I would
sure.
not detract from that.
Yes.
However, I'm still going to go for it. He should have been Apollo.
Yeah. Can't disagree with that. Oh, he could have shared the screen with Daphne Keene again, like they did in his Dark Materials.
Exactly.
Could have.
Lance Reddick.
Rest in peace.
Rip. Pour one out.
Great Zeus. Great casting for Zeus. He's a great casting for anything.
Really, really made Zeus an asshole.
Yes, in the best way.
But also, Zeus kind of is an asshole.
Yes! Under any interpretation. Outside of Disney. Ironically.
Yeah. I'm going to say mid for Poseidon. I feel like the casting for the movie was better.
Yeah, Toby Steffens in the show, I don't think gets a whole lot to do. They obviously bring him in more than he is in the show, or in the book rather. And they, just to like paint that more obvious regrets and tragedy behind, you know, the requirements that he has to be away from Percy, but he's more of an active player in the story when he like breaks the rules and like visits Sally in those flashbacks. There's not a lot for him to do, but I think he's good for what he does.
I mean, yeah, but also, dude, the original Poseidon in the movie was just Owen Hunt.
It was Owen Hunt.
I'm sorry, the actor's name is Kevin McKidd. It's Owen Hunt from Grey's Anatomy. It's like one of the longest running Grey's Anatomy actors.
Mm-hmm.
He played the redheaded surgeon.
Kevin McKidd is never a bad inclusion in literally anything.
Yeah. What else is there? We got
Ares.
Jay Duplass. Oh, I was looking at Hades.
We also have Ares.
Ares? Nothing is bad with Ares. Ares was a fucking phenomenal.
I like how they did Ares. He's a straight up douchebag, you know, biker, doesn't give a shit, easily tricked, which I think is fun. Like, I think it's nice that Grover gets a more active part in that that part of the story where he's like manipulating Ares in that moment. Adam Copeland, he is definitely a wrestler first, an actor second, but I think overall he's fine.
Oh, sir, he was an actor first.
Was he?
Well, no, he was a wrestler first. I'm just saying, how dare you make the clear distinction of, you know, actor versus wrestler.
I guess they're
You've
both
never
fun.
Seen the sci-fi show Haven before, have you?
Sure haven't.
Bro, Haven, amazing show. Adam Copeland was the sheriff for like the final 2.5 seasons. Mm. Great sci-fi show. He was also great. I would say he had a superpower curse, maybe.
Okay.
Where all bullets that were shot within like a certain proximity would just bend their way like a black hole to him.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was cool.
Adam, I was unfamiliar with your game. But you were talking about Jay Duplass as Hades.
It was okay.
He's good for the way they took him. I just don't understand why they can't make Hades serious in this adaptation or the previous adaptation in the movie. Do we not have enough jokey gods? Look at the fucking... I have copy and pasted the description of Hades in the book, and I'm just going to read this for no particular reason. He was the third god I'd met, but the first who'd really struck me as godlike. He was at least 3 meters tall, for one thing, and dressed in black silk robes and a crown of braided gold. His skin was albino white, his hair shoulder length and jet black. He wasn't bulked up like Ares, but he radiated power. He lounged on his throne of fused human bones, looking lithe, graceful, and dangerous as a panther. That Hades is in zero adaptations. We are 0-2 on that Hades in either adaptation we've gotten so far.
Dude, it would have been hard for them to get that Hades.
I mean, who would you cast as that Hades?
Oh, there's a very obvious answer to this.
Go on.
Allow me to do a quick Google search.
I also had a immediate thought.
All right, I found it.
Go on.
I would cast Tom Sturridge.
Tom Sturridge.
I was going to say, I'll make it easy for you. It's Dream from Sandman.
Okay.
I was going to say, literally, the way that you just described it is just, let me make Dream just a bit more evil.
I can see that. I can see. I think he'd be good at that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is just Dream from Sandman, but evil.
My immediate thought for the casting was Peter Serafinowicz.
Who the fuck is that?
The original voice of Darth Maul.
There was an original voice of Dark
Maul? In Phantom Menace, yes, in the two instances where he speaks.
I honestly thought those were just Ray Park.
Nope. Peter Serafinowicz. But I can see both of those people.
Yeah. I honestly think that... Oh, now that I think about it, if Steve Coogan was any younger, Steve Coogan could have been our perfect Hermes.
Steve Coogan.
Alan Partridge.
I can see that. I can see him as a Hermes, yeah.
How dare you not know your cheeky British comedies?
You're right, you're right.
But yeah, I would say the casting of the gods was really strong.
I think for the direction they went with, yes.
I really think that two misses were Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jay Duplass.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're still good. I just don't think they're great.
I think the way they played Jay Duplass in this show could have been a good Hermes.
Yeah.
Maybe with a little more energy. Though I will say, Nathan Fillion in the second Logan Lerman movie as Hermes. Yeah, that's just the best one.
It's just Nathan Fillion.
It's just Nathan Fillion, which is all he needs to be.
I was going to say, everything about Nathan Fillion in any comedy movie. I would say he can be Guy Gardner. He can be Hermes. Now that we think about it, Hermes basically is just Guy Gardner. The same
is
personality.
It?
I think
it?
So. He can fight if he wants to.
It could.
He has snakes.
I don't know if Guy Gardner is known for his snakes.
No, but snakes are green. Guy Gardner can make green things. You've got to work inside of my brain, Caden.
Yeah, right. I'm scared of your brain.
I was just going to say that the two brain cells occasionally will hit and form a coherent thought. But for the rest of it, you just got to keep guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think looking at this first season overall, I think it is a really good interpretation of the first book. It makes some obvious differences, some that make sense also. Quick shout out to the cameo for Rick Riordan in the first episode.
Where was he in the first episode?
He was one of like the faculty members when Percy is getting, I was going to say executed, expelled from his first school in the show.
Oh, I did remember that. Yeah.
He's like in the shadows in the corner.
Yeah. While we're talking about the show, though, just so we can kind of go through episode by episode really quick, because this is one of the highlights, I think, of the first season.
Okay.
The Medusa episode.
I was just about to bring it up.
Was just extremely strong in the series.
I agree.
It was something that was glossed over way too quickly in the movie when it was such an important part of the book.
Mm-hmm.
The series did it right.
I think so. I think that the Medusa episode is the best example of a large part of the mindset they went into this show with. The books obviously adapt legends, you know, these Greek myths that are thousands of years old. The books adapt those legends into a modern audience. And the show continues to do that, like continuing to adapt the story and how it's depicted in the books to a 2020s audience. There's more representation. There's more awareness of like child-parent relationships. And there's more like modern interpretations of these mythological figures like Medusa.
I think just one of the strongest things is about the episode. I mean, even getting away from like the whole 2020 is just more representation in the story kind of thing. But the fact that it kind of just subverted what the movie did.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, you walk into this place. Oh, no, it's Medusa's place. We got to fight the monster.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, they kind of suspect it's Medusa from the beginning. If not, I'm pretty sure they just know it's Medusa.
Right.
But then they still go into her house and kind of just hang out until, you know, words fuck up and she's reminded of the trauma that Annabeth's mom, again, the gods are bitches in this series. And I was going to say, everything was really good until Medusa was reminded that it's Annabeth's mom's fault that she looks this way. And that was only because of a relationship that she was having with Poseidon.
Right. The show, like you said, looks at the gods in that light of they're not these storybook, you know, superheroes that sit on the clouds and, you know, make cool looking thunderstorms. They're bitches. They're bad. They're corrupt and they're selfish and they're childish and they abandon their family and they fight amongst each other. And the victims of their infighting are people like Medusa and people like their children. And I like the view of Medusa as a victim of the gods is a much more modern interpretation of this mythological character, and I think it's played out really well in this first season of the show. And like, but she's still threatening, she's still terrifying, and I love what they do with Medusa in terms of camera work and how she's like physically shown, how like her eyes are always, almost always, just unseen. It's almost always the perfect camera angle to where her eyes are just out of view. There are like one or two moments where they actually do show the eyes, and I almost like wish they stuck to just like not showing them at all, because I think that'd be just such a fun visual. But I just think it's so cool, and it plays really well into like breaking down these demigods, their unrealistic view of their absent parents, or the, like. Looking at them as gods when they're really just fallible, childish family members and siblings bickering amongst each other.
I mean, yeah, this entire first season, I feel like, delves more into the whole family issues side of the books before you really even get into that in like the latter half of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Medusa thing being under the shawl was really nice. Especially, it kind of felt weird, at least in the movie, when there was like the whole like tunic thing. Or basically, it was the wrap, and you slowly unwrapped it, and there were snakes. And I felt like there was, I feel like, a greater emphasis on like the pain behind her beauty. Because Medusa, like, without seeing the eyes and, like, what was under the hat, like, astonishingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she looked basically...
Or in the book, she's, like...
In the book, I think she's just, like,
a straight-up monster.
Just grotesque Gorgon, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, in this version, it was literally, like, Southern Belle running a flower store.
Mm-hmm.
And then, don't look at all of it, or else, boom, stone.
Right.
Which I think also brings me to one of my favorite parts of the season, the baseball cap. I just love the baseball cap.
Yeah.
One of the strongest items in the Percy Jackson universe. Yeah. Now, I do got to go to one episode I wasn't a huge fan of, though.
Okay.
Which is the Lotus Eaters episode.
Okay.
Not for any big reason, just for the fact of I don't remember Lady Gaga's poker face getting played at any point. And I do just want to point out, as part of my childhood nostalgia and bias,
it should be in there.
Every single time I think of that song, I think of the original Lotus Eater section in the movie. It will never get undone. If that song plays when I'm 80 years old, I will look at like a small toddler and be like, this is from the ye old times of the first Percy Jackson. And they're like, there's an original? Of course there is. it's not the remake of the remake of the remake. But yeah, that, and then the fact that there was not a dude from the 70s playing the French Connection.
Yeah.
How dare they shaft Gene Hackman like that? The French Connection is a masterpiece.
Two great tragedies, you're right.
I just had to bring that up, is Poker Face and the lack of inclusion of a French Connection pinball machine. Absolute travesties, worst part about the entire season.
Fair critiques.
Almost ruined everything for me.
Understandable. But I feel like there is more to talk about in the show overall. And mentioned as an example of the representation, we get to see that one wheelchair user girl who apparently is a big old badass because she's one of the campers that Chiron offers Percy to take with him on the quest, which, hey, get representation for differently able people, and apparently she kicks ass.
I would say, I feel like she... Was she a child of Hephaestus?
I have no idea.
Oh, she had to be. I feel like she, like, made that wheelchair into, like, a rocket launcher or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
There was no way. Now that I think about it, I'm looking through the chapter names.
Mm-hmm.
The three hags. I was going to say they drive the taxi. So fun.
That is in the second story.
What do you mean?
You're talking about the Gray Sisters?
Yeah, the Gray Sisters are in the first one.
That's in Sea of Monsters.
Damn it. Oh, different three ladies. I'm sorry. I just saw one of the chapters was called Three Old Ladies Knit the Socks of Death.
Oh, those are the Fates.
Yeah, those are the Fates.
Yeah.
Which were also in The Sandman.
Yes, they were.
I'm getting my mythologies all mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's one episode that I feel like would have been hard to scale. So I was kind of disappointed by it because it would have been the most intensive. Mm-hmm. How did you feel that Capture the Flag went?
Well, we get to see Percy Jackson flossing. So there's that.
I forgot about that. You know what? I'm just going to take this pair of scissors right here and just plunge it into my ear.
I understand. It I don't know. It didn't stand out immensely to me. It kind of like shows Percy as a sort of dumb kid in a likable way, or he's just distracting himself when he's bored, which I guess makes sense for the position he's put in as a distraction to draw off Clarice, but they don't introduce the Hellhound, unless I'm forgetting that, did they?
Are you talking about Mrs. O'Leary?
No, the Hellhound that's let into the camp during that Capture the Flag sequence in the book, and attacks Percy, and that's when he's claimed.
Oh, yeah, no, they did it very differently.
Right, he gets into the fight with Clarice and gets knocked in the water, and that's when he gets the power boost to beat her, and that's when he's claimed.
Yeah. But they also did that in the movie, too, which, honestly, it may just be the VFX budget of making a good hellhound. However, mm-hmm. if they don't put Mrs. O'Leary...
I'll be upset.
Into the series, I will revolt.
She should be there.
Now, the one last thing that I don't remember... Again, it's been over a year since I've seen the season.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything about the waterbeds? Was that in the series, or was that a book thing that they left out?
I think they left it out. Or, God, it's been a minute since I've seen the series either. I did not have a lot of prep time for this episode, so I did not get to rewatch back the whole first season. But I think they cut them out. I kind of want to, like, go open Disney Plus real quick and check. Because do they cut them out? Yes?
I want to say they cut out the thing with the Nereids and the waterbed. Because I want to say they replaced it with like the giants in the that's an Apollo Trials book. Everything's blending together. I remember them going into like a super hunter like outlet and buying like grenades from a store. But that is a different book in a different time.
They do have Procrustes in the show. I thought they did.
Oh, Krusty's is in the show.
They do have Krusty's Waterbed Palace. Yes, I thought they included it.
Thank God.
Yes, it's in there. Because he's like a son of Poseidon too, and it's like a weird connection Percy has.
Yeah. So I was just trying to think of major differences between the books and the series. And honestly...
Oh, fucking Kronos. Percy has that weird vision of Kronos at the end at Montauk Beach.
In the book?
In the show. At the end of the first season, Percy has a weird vision of a cloaked, face-hidden Kronos, like, walking up on the beach house.
Oh, I remember that.
At the end of the first season.
Yeah. That's an interesting approach to things.
I feel like it is another representation of how this show is definitely trying to foreshadow the rest of the series to come.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach given what we know about Kronos and his ability to walk up to a beach house.
Yeah, it's such a nothing design, too, that he's just a guy in a cloak. Could be any other design in any other show for any other character.
I would say it secretly could be Matt Damon coming to reclaim his son. How do we know that Percy Jackson isn't secretly Telemachus?
Well, Kronos would be his grandson. Kronos would be his granddad. But it could be Matt Damon.
Okay, true. You know, I think that's what we're going to go with. Odysseus and Kronos are the same person. Matt Damon, get your ass on Disney Plus.
Be interesting casting for Kronos, but okay.
It doesn't matter. It's Matt Damon.
It's Matt Damon.
He could do any role great.
I guess it could.
But, Cad, any last thoughts on this? Are there any things that you're looking forward to, I guess? Or I know you've already seen the second season, but after the first season, anything that you were looking forward to seeing in the second on what they could improve from the first, what they would keep up? Anything you hope they wouldn't take creative differences with?
I was looking forward to seeing how they did Tyson in the second season, and I was overall satisfied with how they did it, especially that one shot on the cruise ship when he's walking out of the fire. You'll see when you watch it. Yeah, that was the one, that was the big one that stuck out. Polyphemus, it was obviously going to be a big thing in the second season. And I'll have to see how you feel about Polyphemus in the second season, Cole.
Interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to it. That will probably be my big watch for the end of this summer.
Uh-huh.
But overall, where does The Lightning Thief land for you among all the Percy Jackson books?
Oh, God. Probably like number two or three. My number one is definitely Last Olympian. I wonder if Lightning Thief or Titan's Curse is higher.
That is a good place to have it. I think The Lightning Thief is the perfect middle of the traditional series for me.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I still think it's like top four or five books across like all 17 at this point.
Yeah.
That Rick Riordan has written in the main line.
So many books.
So many books at this point. To think we'll have to go through them all at some point.
Oh, but no.
I said we've got 17 full seasons of Disney Plus to go.
Oh, no. More Percy Jackson and the Heroes of Olympus? Oh, my God. How tragic.
Completely. I really just am excited about Titan's Curse coming.
As am I. I look forward to seeing Daphne Keene, as I do with any piece of media.
Wait, Daphne Keene is going to be who?
Artemis. She's cast as Artemis.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, definitely looking forward to that then. So, all right, well, I think that we have said everything that we need to say about The Lightning Thief. Great first book to one of the best kids series of all time.
Definitely.
Kid series in quotations. I mean, I will probably get a book for years. Lovely dog sounds. And I really don't know what else to say. I was going to say, Logan Lerman launched this man's career. Fantastic. And hopefully Walker Scobell just goes on to bigger and greater things after he's given us a full five seasons of work.
Yes. No sooner.
no sooner. I mean, we could even force him into another five if we really wanted to, get us the Heroes of Olympus money.
Yeah.
But everybody, I think for now, I am Cole Browning.
I'm Kyle MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. Enjoy the rest of camp season.